Welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast, your weekly insight into the world of Formula One. Thank you once again for listening to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will, and I'm joined by Ben Stevens, the editor of the Grand Prix 24/7 website. We're here today to discuss a historic weekend in the tradition of Formula One as Lewis Hamilton breaks a long-standing 14-year record of Michael Schumacher. Lewis took his 92nd win here on Sunday at Portimão in the Portuguese Grand Prix, the first Portuguese Grand Prix since 1996. Ben, what do you make of just what a brilliant achievement this is and what a fun race that was as well?
Yeah, it was, especially considering the final margin of victory. It was a very entertaining race, and honestly, there's not much we can say about Lewis that we haven't said before, but I guess we kind of have to go into it, don't we? Because when you break the record for most wins in a Formula One career, well, you have no choice. It's unbelievable what he's done. You don't have to say he's the greatest, and you know, we've been over this before, and the entire internet's been over this before in terms of if it's him or someone else, or whether you should have the GOAT debate at all. But I think you just, no matter where you stand on that particular argument, I think you have to stand up and give him a round of applause just for the statistical accomplishment.
Yeah, I think my view is generally that these kind of GOAT debates are always about that kind of eye of the beholder, and you're always going to have a preference for your era. You know, I kind of, all of my Formula One watching and writing life has been, you know, dominated by Lewis Hamilton, you know, ever since he came through in 2007. So obviously I think that the perspective I have on him as like a someone who writes and talks about Formula One compared to someone who was watching in the 80s, perhaps like Paul, is going to be completely different, because, you know, ever since I've been watching and talking about it, he's been there. But nonetheless, regardless of where he kind of quite stacks up in the very top end of the sport, he's obviously a great, one of the best of his era, one of the best there has ever been. And I think that not only is he, you know, broken this record, but also he looks like he's on the verge of earning his seventh title as well, which is something that, regardless of, you know, how many races there are in a season, these other things, you know, with reliability as well, which they talk about making it perhaps easier to rack up a large number of wins nowadays. I think that seventh title is another ridiculously strong achievement, and I think that the way that he won this Grand Prix put something that was already pretty much beyond doubt, even further beyond doubt, that Hamilton will win his seventh title this season, probably within the next few weekends.
Yeah, it's really a matter of time until he wraps it up at this point. And Sunday just hammered that home, didn't it? Just not just in terms of the actual result and him, you know, obviously outscoring Valtteri Bottas again, but the way he did it, where he's basically forced to chase Bottas for the better part of 20 laps, and not only does he do that and overtake him, but then he absolutely smashes him in the end. It's something we've known it all year long. He's just the better driver. It's as simple as that. And whether it's next time out at Imola or, you know, 2-3 races time, he's going to get number 7.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that one of the things about this race that was so impressive was just not just the kind of the margin of victory, but just like the way he calculated that race so well. You could tell at the start he was being super cautious on those mediums, and I think he knew that it wasn't going to be won or lost at the first corner for him. He knew that he had the tyre advantage, probably the speed advantage over a race distance to get Bottas, so he wasn't going to force a move that wasn't there and to try and hold him back and potentially put himself out of the race. He knew exactly what was at stake. He was cautious to begin with, and then when he got that tyre temperature up, he was just absolutely dominant. And it's funny because Crofty, I think, falls for it every weekend when Hamilton comes on the radio and says, my tyres, my left front is graining a little bit. And then he puts in fastest lap after fastest lap. Within, you know, 6 laps, he's overtaken Bottas and he's like seconds up the road, and every single time Crofty still falls for it and thinking that Bottas has got the advantage. But I thought this was a really masterful performance from Hamilton. And you know, it doesn't necessarily matter what you think of him, but Bottas is a good driver, like a very good driver, who many people thought was an incredibly good driver prior to his arrival at Mercedes, and Hamilton's just beaten him by 25 seconds in identical machinery, and that's a pretty special performance. And it was nice that the one to get him over the line, to have the record outright, was such a good race and such a good drive from him. But I think that there's plenty of interesting kind of other talking points beyond Lewis Hamilton. Just a word on Bottas from you. Were you surprised that, you know, usually in race trim Hamilton does have the edge while it's much closer in qualifying, but do you think perhaps that this was a particularly poor weekend for Bottas and poor performance?
Yeah, it's tough to say, to be honest, because I think this is always sort of the case. Is like, to be fair, there's definitely situations where Valtteri has done something wrong, he's made an error or whatever, and you can say, yeah, that's definitely a poor performance. In this case, as big as the margin was, I'm more inclined just to say that just Lewis was that much better. It was a particularly tricky sort of situation with this track and those tyres and getting those tyres up to temperature and sort of managing that, as you say. And Lewis just did such a masterful job of playing the long game. So, it's tricky. I'm not sure. And Valtteri was, you know, he wasn't exactly getting smashed in qualifying either. So, yeah, I wouldn't knock him too much, to be honest. I just think this was Lewis at his absolute apex. And just to add to what you were saying there before, like, this is the thing about the greats, is that they have this confidence that very, very good athletes in any sport might have, but they also might not have, or might waver more often. And Lewis clearly just had confidence in himself, no matter what his position on the track was, that he had the goods to win it. And, you know, he just drove his race, and his race ended up being this 25-second margin of victory. So, yeah, I just take my hat off to him, as opposed to say, you know, not good enough from Valtteri.
Yeah, and I think that the tyres and the situation with the track temperature and the kind of ambient temperature at the circuit was obviously probably going... I guess when it rains, and I guess those gaps that are usually kind of 1 or 2 tenths are amplified because of the kind of additional skill that's required. And I think it's probably just a situation like that where, you know, the gaps between the drivers is just enhanced because of those conditions. So I think you saw the same with Verstappen, you know, lapping Albon and Leclerc and Vettel as well. Potentially that those gaps that have been there all season were just made even bigger because of these rather tricky temperatures. But I think we move on next to Max and Red Bull in third place. A pretty weird weekend for the team. Obviously, this has been a really difficult weekend for Alex Albon, and I think that he is really running out of chances to prove that he should be in that seat next season. But Max Verstappen, you know, came third, and at one point I was predicting that potentially Charles Leclerc would pip him for that final spot on the podium. But a bit of a weird weekend for Max. Generally, as always, quick driving, but got himself tangled up in a couple incidents, including one with Sergio Perez on the opening lap.
Yeah, it was a bit of a strange one. He was. I mean, well, it started with that Friday incident, right, which was just so unnecessary. No matter who you blame, it just shouldn't have happened there. With Lance Stroll, but he did well on Saturday, really put the fear of God in Mercedes there to get as close as he did, I think. But his Sunday, well, the overall performance was solid. I think it's what you know, if you were just looking at the timesheets, you'd say, oh, that's what you expect out of Verstappen in this particular Red Bull with the sort of, you know, pace difference it has to Mercedes. But yeah, it was a bit scruffy in places, and I'm sure Max sort of, if he could rate it, he'd probably agree. It was probably like a 6 out of 10 for him. I don't think it was as much as he never was really in contention. Regardless, I don't think to sort of go any higher on the podium. I definitely think it wasn't one of his better races. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think the incident with Perez, I would say it was probably the right decision, especially given it was on the first lap, to not award a penalty either way.
Yeah.
But I do think that this was probably slightly marginally Max's fault. And yeah, just not having a good relationship with those racing points this weekend. But despite Sergio obviously getting spun out on the opening lap and having to pit early, you know, he basically drove a brilliant race to get back up the order. I think that it's something we mentioned earlier in the season, that he's kind of been struggling, but he looks like he's really back on form now. And I've been super impressed with him in the last few weekends, and I think that Perez is earning himself a drive for next season with the way that he's been performing at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt that the Vettel announcement lit a fire under his backside, and today was the best example of that. Or not today, sorry. Yesterday was the best example of it yet, because to be last on lap one and then come back to seven, and he had to get past some very good cars to do that, is a real testament to his ability. And I don't think there's any doubt at this point that he deserves a spot on the grid next year. The tricky thing is, where do you slot him in, and who does it come at the expense at? And Will, you probably haven't seen this, but there's an interesting story that's just sort of going around the last hour or two, that George Russell's saying that the rumours about him going to Williams are a ploy by Perez to sort of force Red Bull to sign him up, in the near future, which is interesting. There's a fair few candidates for the Red Bull seat. I wouldn't be necessarily against seeing him go there, especially after a day like yesterday. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him both on track and off, you know, with what he's doing, and especially after Sunday.
Yeah, I'm starting to think perhaps that this the situation with Perez to Williams is potentially, it doesn't make as much sense potentially as I think that Williams to Haas, Perez to Haas. Obviously, Williams have the relationship with Mercedes, and that just means that I can't really see why they'd want to get rid of Russell, let alone the fact that he's driving brilliantly and has been all season, and has been ever since he moved up to Formula One. So it that doesn't quite make sense to me, whereas I think Perez to Haas makes a lot more sense, and that's, of course, if he doesn't earn this Red Bull seat. Obviously, for him to be moved up, or anyone to be moved up to the Red Bull seat, that would mean that Alex Albon has lost his seat. This was a bit of a disaster, really, for Albon. Qualifying was no different to how it's been all season, with Albon about half a second behind. But in the race, I think that kind of proactivity and that ability to make moves and get himself out of trouble, it is not so evident as perhaps it was at the start of this season or the end of last season. I think that he looks like he's in a very difficult spot in terms of the car. It's not working in the way that he wants it to, and I think that he's kind of fallen into the trap that Gasly potentially fell into with the kind of the mindset and the pressure. And I think, unfortunately, he's being shown up in the most ruthless way possible by Verstappen, who's just, you know, incredibly quick. And it's a shame for Albon, but it's two races in a row now without scoring a point. He only scored 1 point in Russia. He's only 1 point ahead of Gasly, the guy he replaced in the standings, despite Gasly being in the sister team. So, yeah, I'm really struggling to see a way that Albon hangs onto that seat unless there's a dramatic turnaround in the next five races.
Yeah, I think we're at the point where you just feel bad for him, right? This is the thing about F1, is that there's only 20 seats, and you've got to respect the fact that all these drivers have some quality, regardless of whether you think they're particularly deserving of their seat. They're among the elite of the elite to get to where they have. And so to sort of turn around and say, you know, well, they don't deserve it, it's harsh. And I can imagine if I was in Albon's shoes hearing it from everywhere, and he would, he's getting asked in press conferences. I'm sure he sees it when he goes on Twitter or whatever, you know, it would be almost impossible for that not to get you down. So you've got that sort of, compounding on your race after race, and sort of, you know, that reinforces in the back of your mind and, you know, makes you doubt yourself even more. And then, as you say, you've got this teammate in Max Verstappen who is just utterly ruthless and just really freaking good. And so he's going to make you look, you know, less than great anyway. It is sort of this really, really rough spot he's been put in. But having said that, like, the flip side of having, you know, only 20 seats on the grid and even less in potential race-winning cars is that it's not a right to be there. It's a privilege. And if he's not earning that right, you have to say, well, maybe it's time Red Bull look elsewhere. And the thing for me is there's two ways to view this final five races of the season. I mean, it's for assuming Albon stays there, it's clearly it's a chance for him. He only needs one result. One win would completely turn things around in terms of his perception, I think, at least inside the team, where they would be more than willing to keep him on next year. But the other way to look at these five races, you know, it's easy for me to say from the outside for sure, but I'm going to say it anyway, is that, well, why not use this to really roll the dice and try something different? And I actually wrote this in my article just went up just before, is that, well, he probably won't get, they would never switch him with, you know, another race this week, but say in the final four races, why not drop Kvyat, put him in the AlphaTauri next to Gasly, and let them sort of go head-to-head and see, you know, for real what's what, and then put Hülkenberg in the Red Bull seat and see if he's up to the task. And that way you would sort of be able to gauge the relative level of three drivers instead of one, which is what you're doing right now with Albon. I don't know if you think that'd work or not.
It's definitely an interesting idea. The reason I think they probably wouldn't go for that is just because they haven't got so much to play for the rest of the season. You know, they're pretty much guaranteed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're pretty
much
guaranteed to come second in the championship. I think all that they really want to do is maybe try and earn Max another win. So, yeah, I think that, you know, from an outsider's perspective, and you can kind of play musical chairs and move people in and out as you like, I think it sounds like a very feasible and probably a good idea in terms of, as you say, getting that that cross-reference between the two drivers and, you know, who compares how and in what way to who. But I can just probably see them sticking the way they are until the end of the season. I think, obviously, I guess the argument for Albon is obviously, like, you know, it feels like he's had almost a whole season, but in reality he's only had 12 races, which is only about half a season in normal times. So I just think that you may as well just give him the last five. And as you say, all he needs is one big result and things kind of turn on their head. So I'm really fascinated to see how this plays out over the next few races. And he's undoubtedly under a huge amount of pressure. And I'm sure that Red Bull are definitely considering scenarios like the one that you just came up with. And I think it works in many ways. But I think they'll probably just stick with what they've got until the end of the year, just probably for convenience and for the fact that I don't think there's any kind of like urgency with which they need to act. But I guess the obvious next point of discussion is to talk about Pierre Gasly. Another fifth place finish. Like, is there anyone on the grid who's driving better than Gasly right now?
Well, I think, you know, that there's definitely a few names you could throw on there, but he's a bit of recency bias there, Will. But no, I do understand where you're coming from, because that was a great drive. And, you know, Red Bull sort of are making it out that it's more the comfort with that car as opposed to a sort of uptick in overall form. But all we can see as outsiders is the results he's getting, which are Red Bull worthy results. You know, if you're getting fifth in a Red Bull, that would have been acceptable, especially when Verstappen's third. So to get it in the, you know, lesser car, that's a great achievement. And he's been doing results like that not every week. He's had some, you know, rougher drives, but he's obviously had some also unbelievable ones too. So yeah, that's another big tick in my book for old Pierre.
Yeah, and as much as I think that he is a good enough driver to probably earn that Red Bull seat and earn a second shot at it, I do think that by the sounds of it, there was more at play than just a kind of driver and performance issue. And as a result,
apparently,
I think that it's probably best for Gasly to actually probably look elsewhere. Stick around at AlphaTauri while they've got this kind of level of performance, because at the moment he legitimately can compete for big points pretty much every weekend. So, you know, there's no sense in him moving on. But if I was Gasly, I'd be more looking at potentially an opening at Racing Point or Renault or McLaren in the next few years as my next step, rather than a step up to Red Bull. Obviously, those teams all have kind of driver lineups that look pretty strong, but you never know how things go in Formula One, and that's probably what I would be doing if I was Pierre Gasly in terms of looking for my next move and my next drive. Let's have a quick word also about Ferrari. I think that we're definitely seeing some shoots of recovery from them as a team. It's been evident in qualifying for a few weeks now, and potentially the situation with the lower temperatures worked to their advantage here, because obviously Leclerc didn't chew up his tyres in anywhere near as rapid fashion as he had been in previous races. And yeah, a fourth place result for him is brilliant, and just kind of a little reminder to everyone of how good a driver he is, because, you know, this has been a tough season for him and the team.
Yeah, it has, absolutely. But as you say, Leclerc doing what he did this weekend and has been doing previous weekends in qualifying, at least, he's just showing his quality. Whether that car is P4 worthy, as it was on Sunday, like, you know, I still think most people would say it's behind that midfield trio of Racing Point, Renault and McLaren. But if they're at this point where on their day they can jump all those teams as Sunday was, well, that's progress. How much progress? Hard to tell. And Matteo Bonotto said afterwards that, you know, he sort of played that down, said it's probably not as much progress as this result's made out, but it's some progress. And that's, considering the way the season started, that's something, you know, you can't turn your nose up at. On the flip side, you've got Seb Vettel, who clearly isn't happy. What he said after the race is, I think, quite explosive, or has potential to be quite explosive, basically saying he doesn't have the same car as Leclerc, or he suspects he might not have the same car as Leclerc. Whether that's true or not, there's literally no way of us knowing, but he's driving like he doesn't have the same car as Leclerc. I would wager that a lot of that is just sort of his personal form and the mental frame of mind he's in. It's not necessarily the same situation as Albon, where it's sort of coming from outside, you know, just tons of media speculation, because, you know, his future is secure. But at the same time, he's had a rough go of it with the sort of way this Ferrari, you know, saga is ending for him. And he has seemed for a while now down in the doldrums. And there's this massive gap between him and Leclerc that's undeniable, and he admitted to it yesterday after or 2 days ago after qualifying. I doubt that's going to change anytime soon. Whether that's because they have even cars or not, I just think mentally Vettel is not in a good enough place to drive and, you know, contend with Leclerc. Yeah, hopefully that changes at Racing Point, as they could be getting damaged goods. I guess we'll soon find out. But yeah, it's definitely going to be a subplot, both the team's overall performance and the performance relative to each other of the two drivers for these final five races. Definitely one to watch.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to kind of try and save comment on the Vettel situation, because I think, like you, there's a lot of different things going on with Vettel's relationship with the team, and you know, but at the same time, I probably wouldn't put it past Ferrari to, you know, be handicapping Vettel, not necessarily handicapping Vettel, but maybe not giving him quite everything in the same way that they are with Charles Leclerc, because, you know, I've watched Sebastian Vettel for a number of years, and this is not the driver that he is. You know, regardless of the spins or whatever, you know, even as recently as the end of last season, you know, Vettel was putting that car on pole, and he was challenging for victories, and he was not that far off Charles Leclerc at all. So this isn't the Sebastian Vettel that we know. So I'm going to try and, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt for now, I suppose, or give the team the benefit of the doubt, just not kind of point my finger anywhere, and just wait to see what Sebastian Vettel turns up at Racing Point next season, or Aston Martin next season.
I guess before we close out, we can have a quick discussion about some of the other midfield teams. McLaren obviously had an excellent start with Norris running in fourth and Sainz up in first after he overtook Hamilton and Bottas in the first lap, but actually kind of turned out to be slightly disappointing for them in the end, with Norris obviously tangling with Lance Stroll, finishing outside the points, and Sainz actually slipping back to P6. So I think that we were predicting potentially that Renault had the edge there, but then obviously we had Ricciardo and Ocon in 8th and 9th, and Ocon kind of running a crazy strategy in the end. Saw him do over 50 laps on the same set of tyres. But yeah, I think once again the pendulum in the midfield swung back a different way, and maybe now it looks like Racing Point have the best package going into the last few races of the season. Just give us your quick thoughts on that midfield battle and how that's going to end up playing out.
I mean, you know, take your pick. You might as well be throwing darts at a dartboard, because, you know, it's very close. It's exceptionally close. And, you know, it takes a day like yesterday where you have some funky things happening to a few drivers, both good and bad in that midfield, that sort of mix it up. I honestly cannot pick them. I guess I'd give the slight edge to Racing Point, like, you know, by the slimmest of possible margins. We're talking like a, you know, hair's breadth, something slim. I don't know what's slimmer than that, but something slim. But it's exceptionally close. And there's a very good chance we're going to come back here in a week time, you and I will, and we're going to be discussing, oh, we think Renault is now, you know, got the upper hand because, you know, Ricciardo got another podium or something like that. It's, yeah, it's all over the place. The only thing you can say is that they're all very evenly matched.
Yeah, thank the Lord that they are so evenly matched, because it's been the level of action and the consistency of the racing in the midfield that's really made this a season to remember, I think. Unfortunately, we haven't quite had the racing out front that we'd have hoped for, but the midfield is kind of more than made up for that. And, you know, it's now just the responsibility of Red Bull, Ferrari, and potentially McLaren, Racing Point and Renault to bridge that gap. And, you know, now we can have this massive scrap at the front for race wins, because that would be amazing to witness. And I really hope that they can kind of start to bridge that gap, especially as we enter the new regulations in 2022. But that's everything we've got time for this week. Thanks very much, Ben, for taking your time to chat through the race with me. Obviously, we are having a very quick turnaround before heading to Imola this weekend. So we'll speak to you before that race, and we'll be back again for our race review on Sunday. Thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye.
See ya.